Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to yet another episode of Gym Class All-Stars. As always, we are brought to you by the Vigit sports betting app, where you can bet fake coins, win real prizes. One of the big prizes you can win is a PS5. So if you've been struggling to pick one up on your own, download Vigit, win a bunch of coins, and you won't even have to worry about it. You don't have to deal with Target, Walmart, any of that stuff. You can win it right off of the app. Use our referral code All-Stars to help us out when you download it. All right, big week of sports here. Playoffs well underway, of course. World records being set, though, as we're preparing for the Tokyo Olympics here in the summer, or later in the summer, I guess I should say. Female track star Sydney McLaughlin just broke the world record for the 400-meter hurdles. She ran a 51.9. She is the first woman to ever run that race under 52 seconds flat. Not only that, she beat the previous world record holder in that race yesterday, I believe. Fantastic performance by Sydney McLaughlin. So we wanted to start the show giving her a big shout out. She owns a world record. I mean, that speaks for itself at this point. Even if it only lasts 1 year, like, she was on top for a brief amount of time at the very least. That's crazy. So shout out to her. Hopefully she'll bring home gold for us.
And she was closing in on being year 400 without hurdles, right?
Yes, actually, she already did that. So,
oh, wonderful.
She's well on her way. She's close to Saquon's time without hurdles.
So she had to jump over a bunch of obstacles and still would have beat you in a race.
Yeah, no. Let me put this in perspective, because like I said, Saquon's, like, he finished second place in state my senior year, which I think was also, or my junior year, which is senior year. He ran, I think his final time was 50 seconds, meaning it took this woman only just under 2 seconds less to do the exact same thing with hurdles in the way.
And while I'm making fun of Robbie here, which, you know, we all love, just to be clear, this woman would have smoked me by a solid 15 seconds in probably the 400 alone. I may have big strides, but I probably would have keeled over when I hit the finish line. So honestly, that's awesome to see. And the Olympics are always one of those things. I know this is a trials, but they're always on. Like, it's going to be 10 days of just nonstop events. Like, you have to tune in to watch them. Like, there's just something about them, especially track and field, for whatever reason. Like, those are the fun events. I mean, everyone loved the 100, and Usain Bolt was there because he'd run it sub 10 seconds easily. I always love the hurdles. Those, you know, like we just talked about, always my favorite. And then I have a soft spot for the long jump, because that to me is just the right amount of speed and athleticism jumping. I love it.
I want to second your hurdles thing. This is an amazing moment. So I think I was a sophomore in high school. We were just watching like a JV race. It was the last heat of the girls 100 hurdles. I think it was only like two or three girls actually even running in the heat. Mm. But this one girl tripped on, I think, the second hurdle and her weave fell off. She picked it up and won the race. It is one of the most fantastic things I have ever seen. Our good buddy Jake Ross and I just look at each other and we just start dying.
That is a peak display of athleticism right there.
Oh yeah. I hope that woman is on her way to the Olympics as well, because she damn well deserves it. But so we will keep you guys posted on the Olympics when they get, you know, underway. And of course, any world records that get broken, we'll probably also be tracking basketball pretty closely, as we'll get to the Olympic roster for the men here a little bit in the show, under the show. But that's what we got for track. Again, shout out Sydney McLaughlin, 51.9 on the 400 meter hurdles for women. We're going to move in to the NFL now, where we got a little bit of news for, you know, the first time in a couple weeks. It's always nice. Steelers making some questionable calls here, cutting veteran offensive lineman David DeCastro. Steelers have had one of the better offensive lines of football, but it's been injured over the past few years. Steelers kind of in that murky area of, shoot, do we rebuild? What do we do? I assume this is an effort to save money and to maybe get a little bit younger. Otherwise, I don't feel very good about it as a Steelers fan. I'll say that.
Yeah, I mean, offense lines are always good. Am I right, Robbie?
Yeah, you would know nothing about offensive linemen.
Yeah.
You guys hire anybody to do that shit.
It's true.
That's pretty much it, though, as there's not too much, you know, he hasn't signed anywhere. Steelers haven't necessarily announced a replacement, but that's news on that front. I guess this is kind of a rule change that the NFL is making. It feels not quite like a rule, it's more of just like a, this should have happened already, but they are allowing to wear alternate helmets when throwback jerseys are on. So you're not wearing your weird looking modern helmet with your wacky ass throwback jersey. Hopefully it looks a little more natural, like what it's actually supposed to look like. And the fans watching at home are probably going to appreciate that much more, as it's kind of the whole aesthetic of a throwback jersey, right? You want the whole thing, not just the shirt. Who cares about the shirt?
Oh yeah, if you're going with the creamsicle jerseys for the Bucs, you don't want the weird like red Tampa Bay flag. You got to have the old Buccaneer orange creamsicle helmet with it, the creamsicle and white. You know, it's funny because I don't know if you remember, like the mid to late 2000s, the Chargers had these like navy blue jerseys. They were like, it didn't pop really at all. It was like when Drew Brees was on the team. And then they did these, the alternates were like the powdered blue ones. And I absolutely adored those. And they kind of just took that design and like incorporated into their jerseys. So if my question is, if there's one throwback jersey from a team that has to kind of be incorporated into a future jersey, what would it be? And why is the Houston Oilers?
That'd be spectacular. Don't get me wrong. Ooh, that's a great question. There's some fun throwbacks. I really like that Bucks one just because I love the orange, even though it would look really weird.
You couldn't wear that all like more than two games a year, though. That orange is disgusting.
Yeah. God, I'm thinking those Steelers Bumblebees just for shits.
Nah, better yet, do either the Packers or the Eagles throwbacks from like the 1930s.
Those like blue and yellow Eagles throwbacks.
Yeah, or the dark blue and yellow Packers ones. In all seriousness, I think a good one, like I said, the Tennessee Titans with the Houston Oilers. I also, something about that Kelly Green Eagles jersey also gets me riled up. I think the green is a bit too much. Like, I do like the way they sort of toned it down a bit, but a little bit more of a pop because, like, the green now is a little dull at times. Another good one, the really aggressively, like the Falcons have their black jerseys, but like they're the OG ones, a little bit of red striping in it. Yep, I love those too.
I was actually thinking that. I wasn't sure what other people would think about that, but no, I'm glad you brought that up because I was thinking that. I was like, I feel like that could still kind of look cool.
It would. It's subtle, definitely. But yeah. I'm excited for it. I think you know, each team has a ton of jerseys. Like, there's probably four per team. There's usually, you got your home, your away, your alternate, and there's like some, like I'd call it the city version for the NBA, but
yeah,
there's always some like fourth one that you have, and now you got a fifth. And I think everyone loves a good throwback. There are definitely some bad ones though, and when you overuse them it gets tiresome. Exactly. But I'm here for it. I love a little bit of dispersion and a little bit of added flair to a uniform.
Yeah, no, I'm all for it. I think it's going to be a good move for the NFL. Hopefully this paves the way for those White Tiger Bengals uniforms to get White Tiger helmets. Hopefully.
Ooh, true. Those are good.
That's what we're pulling for. They don't even know. A little bit more for the NFL here. Tom Brady, the timeless wonder, apparently, has hinted that his career could potentially be coming to an end soon, stating, and I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but that his career is near the end. It's coming to a finish. You know, that could mean anything from he wants to win one more Super Bowl to he could still play out the next 5 years, or at least, you know, something like that. I wouldn't expect him to retire at the end of this year unless like it becomes a physically grueling season and maybe the Bucks do end up on top and he's just like, I want to retire a champion. But I mean, you have to expect he's still at least got like at least two, maybe even three left in the tank. Right. I mean, he looked great last year.
I would say two. This year, barring another Super Bowl win, I can't really see him retiring this year. Next year though, I think is kind of when it would, if you win a Super Bowl, going out on top, I think is the best way to do it. And there have, you know, quarterbacks have done it. Peyton Manning being the last example. The great, the bust, Jerome Bettis did it in Super Bowl 40. So, well, wait, hold on, think about this. Jerome Bettis did it in Super Bowl 40. Manning did it in Super Bowl 50. Tom Brady, Super Bowl 60?
That'd be fantastic.
Another – just the thought of another 5+ years of Brady, though, just God, I can't.
It's like LeBron. It's like you can see it happen, but like, man, is it really gonna?
I don't think LeBron makes it past 40. But
yeah, it's tougher, especially. Well, yeah, we'll get to LeBron when he hints at his retirement. But
it's gonna be like, that's gonna be a season-long thing where he's gonna probably try and play the entire season, and halfway through they're doing meh. They'd be like, yeah, this is my last year, you know, all of you should savor it. And then it's gonna be like, wow, this is a crummy victory lap. But hey,
I think he really is gonna calculate like how difficult on his body it's gonna be to wait till his son gets to the NBA. I'll be honest. But we'll get to that when we get to that. But Brady, for now, you know, still playing one more year with the Bucks. They have the exact same offense as last year. So we'll see how successful they can be in year two of Tom Brady. And one more bit of news here for the NFL. Wide receiver Demaryius Thomas has officially decided to call it a career. The 33-year-old, his most notable play probably against the Steelers in the playoffs. Tim Tebow threw this, great touchdown to him, that where he stiff arms like Taylor for like 60 yards. It's one of the most painful sports memories I have of note. But Demaryius Thomas in his prime before the injuries was a spectacular receiver. So shout out to him for a spectacular career, and I hope he enjoys retirement.
Honestly, I'm very surprised he hadn't retired already. I also was beyond surprised that he is only 33, and also surprised Emmanuel Sanders is still older than him. But, you know, that seems to be a common theme in this show, where just Emmanuel Sanders is timeless.
He truly is. He is. Tom Brady can scooch over.
All right. That's it for football, right?
That is it for football.
All right. My rant time, because I was just looking at my phone. You know, this doesn't have to do with sports, but social media also just is tied in. Why is everyone on my feed reposting a story of Venmo trying to get free money? You're not going to win the free money. I just want to let everyone know.
Yeah, I guess Venmo's doing this thing where they're trying to give out money. And it's like, yeah, it's like they're giving out $500, but of 100, that, like, come on. You know how many people are doing this? You know how difficult it is to get. Like, I saw that and I was like, do I even like waste the time to type out the 7 digits that's going to take to put my, like, and that's meh.
Should I do it with the Gym Class All-Stars Instagram account?
Yes, and we will invest it into paraphernalia to sell to everybody.
Of course. We'll invest it into Top Shot. Remember when that was a big thing for a week?
Oh my God, it was.
I just love it's fun. So that Venmo thing has almost 1 million likes, and probably half of my followers on Instagram have reposted already, because I look at a story, I'm like, oh, what's this person? They haven't posted in a while. Venmo. I'm like, All right, I should block you, but I digress. All right, let's move into hockey, because I think let's start with the Eastern Conference. Islanders, Tampa Bay Lightning, game 7, 1-0. Effectively a pretty grueling game. Tampa Bay Lightning come out on top. Their experience definitely showed. They played in the clutch and came out victorious. I don't know how surprising it is. I think the Islanders put up a great fight, taking it to 7 games, but the Lightning were able to prevail. On the flip side, though, in the West, a shocking set of occurrences happened with the Vegas Golden Knights falling to the Canadiens. Wow, the Canadiens were an 8 seed coming into the playoffs, and they have managed to outlast all the teams in the West. And tonight is game 1, if I am not mistaken.
You are correct.
The Lightning are a major favorite, I think, to win the series. They're like minus 285 or something like that. Wow. Canadiens being like plus 220 to win the entire series. I got to tell you, though, like, I don't mind the Lightning, but I kind of just want to see the Canadiens win. We've alluded to this multiple times in the show. Robbie's buddy infamously tweeted that he'd eat his own shoe if the Canadiens win. I am going to make him eat his own shoe, and we will find him and track him down to do it. But
we will.
Also, though, just listen, I know it's the United States, it's 4th of July, it's coming up. We're very patriotic, kind of. Like, we like our country, I guess. I'm trying to pander to the USA Canada thing. I'm kind of rooting for Canada here in hockey.
Oh, no, I 100%. First of all, underdog. Like,
exactly. Yeah, that's more of the thing.
Got a feel for him. Second of all, like, who the hell was like, let's play hockey in Tampa Bay. Like, excuse me?
The best part is they have two hockey teams, which I think is even funnier because they're the Florida Panthers down there.
Pain. So much pain.
Pain.
That's all I got. But yeah, that's pretty much what we have for hockey. As like we said, the Stanley Cup starts tonight. So we will keep you posted on the standings update. Who knows? We might even have a champion by this time next week. We really don't even know. It could be a short series, but hopefully at the very least, it's an exciting one.
Canadian sweep.
Canadian sweep.
It is 1-0 to start the game. Lightning are winning into the first. So not looking good for the Canadians and not looking good for a man eating a shoe, but we're going to prevail here.
We're going to hope. All right, let's move to baseball quickly here before we get into the beast that is basketball. So a little bit here. So first off, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., he is tied for the MLB lead in home runs. He is a absolute front runner for the AL MVP and a starting all-star spot. He just hit career home run number 50 in game number 258. Now stop me if you've heard this before, because Vladimir Guerrero Sr. hit home run number 50 in game number 258 way back when. So in the exact same amount of games, Junior has hit 50 home runs, same amount of time as Senior, a very impressive feat. Like I said, Vlad Guerrero tied with, I believe, Fernando Tatis for the lead league in home runs at 25. So this very promising young player is absolutely absurd. He bats in the heart of the order of a talented Blue Jays offense. So spectacular for him. Shout out to Vlad Guerrero Jr.
Here's a quick question aside. Obviously, when we were younger, the steroid era was very upfront and prominent. We had sluggers like Sammy Sosa, Barry Bonds, and Alex Rodriguez. So I don't know how much like this question really works when you think about that. He hit his 50th home run in about 250 games. So he's hitting like one home run every five games. That pace is significantly slower, though, than those guys, right? Like, I mean, those guys hit like 600-plus home runs in their career. They did it over a ton of years. I still think, though, even like the best sluggers nowadays doing it natural, I mean, they're still kind of slow, if I'm not mistaken. Like, there's definitely not as many home runs from the home run leaders there used to be. Now, granted, that's a byproduct of steroids, obviously.
Yeah. It's tough to compare. You know, there's always a talk of like, do you call the home run champion Barry Bonds, or do you call him, you know, the guy who didn't use steroids? It's tough because someone like Vlad Guerrero is going to, injury pending and how it's going to pay out. But he has all the showings and signs of being a career long great baseball player. But to hit, what is it, like 900 home runs, however many Barry Bonds has?
I'm off here. 756 is – no, sorry. Sure. No, sorry. 762 is Bonds because 756 was what broke the record. But even then, like, Pujols has the most, like, of active players, yeah. And I put active in quotes. And he has, like, 600 some. So – there, like, and that he's been around forever. I mean, he's, you know, he was a Cardinal when I was like six, so it's been
that MVP when we were in what, middle school?
Yeah,
I think the timeless. Big thing for Vlad is gonna be, you know, Pujols went to LA and his career essentially ended. That can't happen for someone like Vlad if he's going for a Barry Bonds type record, because Pujols may not have got there in the end, but you know, had he had three, four more years, he would have got a hell of a lot closer of, you know, being that at least half as good of a player as he was. So Vlad just can't have a drop off like that. Like, he can't get to the top of the mountain and then immediately fall back down. Like, he's going to have to stay up there for a little while and play, you know, like Bonds and Sosa, like long careers. That's how you do it. It's the only chance you have.
The answer is simple. Just get good.
Get good, kid. That is the answer. Longevity, though, baby. Frank Gore got those longevity stats.
It's true.
All right. And one more bit of information here in the MLB. So we mentioned, I don't remember if it was last week or 2 weeks ago, about how the MLB was going to start cracking down on foreign substances on pitchers and, you know, other players. And the first player to be ejected since that crackdown is Seattle pitcher Hector Santiago. He will be missing the next 10 games. You know, he's a pitcher, so it probably affects him a little bit less, but regardless, he'll be away from the team for just about a week and a half. like we said, we're going to see this. We have already seen the other part of this that I want to talk about was Gerrit Cole, because his last three starts have been miserable all month. Actually, he's been, you know, for Gerrit Cole, miserable. And it's because the MLB is cracking down. He has to change what he does so he doesn't get caught. You're seeing the results. You know, maybe it's just a rough month. It's tough. Yankees are, you know, they play in an offensive favorite, you know, heavy stadium, but I don't know, that maybe we're going to start to see this a little more. Some of these random no names start to cool down. Some of these guys who came out of nowhere and became all-star pitchers fall back a little bit. Or is this, you know, in your opinion, is this just maybe a bad month for Gerrit Cole?
I don't know. Gerrit Cole, I wouldn't consider a nobody by any means. He was on the Pirates to start his career.
And he sucked. And
fair. But there are glimpses, like there are glimpses, sure, of startup. It's kind of like with the Tigers when they had, I mean, not to this degree, but like when they had Verlander and Schwarzer, they just like Scherzer, sorry, they just were utterly dominant on just a terrible team. And, you know, they never won a World Series there. But to me, Cole, like, you know, obviously shined within the Astros rotation. And, you know, maybe then you could say, oh, he was part of, you know, Astros cheating, etc. To me, I think this is a bad slump for Cole. I also think the Yankees, for whatever reason, just whatever they're doing, like, just is not working. And I think the idea of throwing millions of dollars and just not giving a shit about your payroll, you know, if it works, you're going to be considered, like, you know, that's what all teams should do. But if it's not, then you're going to get, you know, utterly bullied because you're not making as much profit as you should be. I think this is just a down year for the Yankees in general. And I don't know, I wouldn't lean too heavily into it. Like, the Yankees got to shake it up in the front office, I think, is more of an issue, but it's not good for Cole. But then again, I mean, he's going to be guaranteed like a few hundred million. So Sucks for the Yankees.
I'm about to say it's going to hurt the Yankees even more. But yeah, what you said about the, you know, paying players, it's exactly right. There's always a downside to whatever moves you make in sports, and this is clearly one of them. But we'll see how it all shapes out. We'll see if anybody else gets suspended or whatever happens. But that Hector Santiago, the first one to go down. All right, done hockey, baseball, track, football. Let's get into basketball. A lot to go through. We got coaches being hired. We've got draft lotteries, and of course the playoffs. Let's start with the draft lottery. All right, so that one kind of snuck up on us. We didn't even really realize what it was happening until it was the day of, or I think the day before. So pretty simple, you know, how the lottery works. Changes every once in a while, but
explain the lottery.
You get a percentage based off of how, you know, how you do in the regular season. And, you know, obviously the worse you do, the higher percent chance you get until it was top three. They all have the same percent chance at this point, right? Or is that the—
So, yeah, basically, it's not like NFL where the worst team gets the number one pick. In basketball, with the intention of making sure teams can't tank every year, they try and make it a little more random. So, if you're one of the worst teams, you have a better chance of getting the first pick, but it's not guaranteed. I think if you're the worst team in the league, you have like a 25-ish percent chance of getting it.
I think it's a little less now, but yeah.
So,
but then you get stuff like Toronto, I think, was projected to get 11 or something, or 9, and they ended up getting up to 4. And that's kind of the crazy part of the lottery is, you know, this happened to Cleveland a few years back when they were projected like 14 and they got the number one pick. That's the beauty of the lottery, is that there is that at least a little bit of random factor to it.
Yeah, so the order went, the Pistons were the big winner of the night. They got the first overall pick, which they weren't.
Wanna,
no, you're good.
I just want to real quick say on that. So, like I was saying all during March Madness, I believe Cade Cunningham will be the number one overall pick. Immediately after the draft lottery, Woj tweeted out that Cade Cunningham's camp will be meeting with one team, the Detroit Pistons. And then the next day, I immediately saw on Twitter that it went extremely well, and he is very happy with Detroit.
Yeah,
so and we will most likely see Cade in Detroit,
which is, I think, the good pick, and that's what it should be. Detroit wasn't the worst team, but I think based off what's kind of happened to the franchise, I mean, they had Blake Griffin, but that didn't lead to much. That basically led to an 8 seed in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They have not really been good since you know, Chauncey Billups and like, you know, Rip Hamilton, all of them were there.
They've made the playoffs, but yeah, like a 7 and 8 seed. It's not.
They haven't been the same. So yeah, they're the big one of the night. They will probably select Cade Cunningham. That's, I feel like, kind of a no-brainer. Number two. Who is number two?
Houston.
Okay, yeah. So arguably the worst. I don't know if they finished dead last or they were second dead last. They had to have finished last.
I think they were the worst team in basketball.
Yeah, I mean, horrendous. But obviously, this is a good first step. You have some key pieces like Christian Wood. You have currently a healthy John Wall. So getting another player on top of that from this year's draft could be very beneficial. Mm-hmm. I honestly, after this, like after Cade Cunningham, I haven't looked too much into it, to be honest. Jalen Green is a name that I've always heard because mm-hmm. he was in the G League, kind of that first team of people who didn't go to college and are just playing, you know, getting paid to play, which is interesting. So, you know, I can see him going early. I don't think he'll go number two, but I could be dead wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't done too much research into the pool yet. I know, yeah, Cunningham obviously won, and Green's one to look into. Jonathan Kuminga is a name to look into. I believe he was also on the G League select team. And then the Mobley brothers from USC.
Those are both
players to look into. They're saying, I believe, I think it was Toronto or Orlando saying if they're on the board at 4 or 5, like that's going to be their pick.
Yeah.
From the early reports that I've seen on Twitter.
Then three.
Was that Cleveland?
Yeah. Okay. I was going to say, I thought the Cavs snuck in there. That is interesting. I think they're kind of building something interesting in Cleveland. I think with Sexton, Garland, and Okoro, you have Jared Allen who's kind of young. You know, maybe you get a forward, tell Kevin Love to hit the road, and you got a pretty young team. You're kind of like the Hawks, to be honest.
Kevin Love, I wouldn't be surprised if he's traded before the Olympics are over, to be completely honest, like what happened to Iggy a few years back.
I mean, you should, honestly.
But the big thing that I've been seeing that I think Cleveland needs to buy into at this point, and you know, you may not agree with me, a lot of people may not agree with me, I think they need to get over Colin Sexton and either get rid of him or accept that he's not going to be the guy. He's fine. He can score, but like, he's no better than a prime Lou Williams who could never lead a team. Like, that was never an option. And that's all I'm saying is, like, at least Cleveland needs to know the ceiling that he has. And I don't think he's going to get to, like, a Donovan Mitchell type player.
No, I get it. It's like he's good and he'll, you know, score a lot and put up stats. But, like, to actually elevate to the next level, they would need to move on from him or, you know, retool their team. A little bit like the Mavericks a few years ago when they had Dennis Smith Jr. Now, granted, they weren't, you know, they weren't good, to say the least. But Dennis Smith could score every now and again, but you know, they got a superstar in Luka in the draft and that did wonders. Yeah. So Toronto gets the fourth pick, definitely a better pick than for how, you know, poor they quote unquote did this year. They were competitive. They didn't make the playoffs, but they definitely shot up in the lottery. So definitely worked out for them. This though has been interesting because I've been reading online today that Toronto is very interested in dealing their pick. And actually, no. Not even dealing their pick. They want to potentially add more picks this year.
Yes.
Because a big trade piece that has been thrown around is Pascal Siakam. Mm-hmm. It sounds like the Warriors are interested in bolstering their team, getting a guy like Siakam who could have a very high ceiling and moving on from some of their younger players and maybe one of their high picks that they got. Cause they got we only cover the top five picks because the Magic got the fifth pick, right?
Yes. Yeah. Orlando got five.
That's the top five. The rest of them you can kind of look into. They sort of fell reasonably in order, but the big one was Minnesota. The Timberwolves got number 7. And cause of that, the D'Lo Andrew Wiggins trade, I believe.
Yeah, I think that was it.
They gave it to the Warriors, ended up getting it. I think it was top five protected. So number 7, not protected, obviously. So the Warriors get the 7th pick and the 14th pick because they were the, you know, last team that didn't make the playoffs, and that's how they fell in the lottery. But this is interesting because the trade I heard was the following. The Raptors will give up Siakam, and in return they would get the number 7 pick. So to pair with the number 4, you would get probably Andrew Wiggins and James Wiseman.
Yeah, that's more or less what I heard. I want to hear your thoughts on this first before I go.
I don't know how I feel about Siakam. I think moving on from Wiggins, because you have Kelly Oubre Jr. and like he's serviceable. I don't know how consistent he is, but you could play him at small forward. I like Wiseman. I know he was injured a lot of the season, but he played pretty well. And that was the one thing the Warriors have always missed is like good center depth. I mean, you had Zaza, I guess, but I wouldn't say that's much. Or
Booger face.
Yes, of course. So to me, I wouldn't want to move on from Wiseman, but I don't hate it. I just am skeptical because I know how bad of a season Siakam had this year. But at one point, he was the number two person on a championship team with Kawhi Leonard as the number one, and he was holding his weight, to say the least. So a team of a healthy Steph Curry, a healthy Klay Thompson, which isn't guaranteed. You throw Kelly Oubre Jr. in there. You have Kayvon Looney. And then you got Pascal Siakam. That's a pretty good starting lineup. And Draymond Green.
Draymond, yeah. That's not bad.
But, like, think about it. Like, Draymond would probably get relegated to the bench unless he played small forward.
I think you could play him or Pascal at center. Pascal was playing center a lot for the Raptors this year.
Okay, that's
super successfully, but
that's fair.
All NBA. Yeah.
All right.
I think the Warriors would be really stupid if they did this. First of all, the fourth with the seventh this year is like, who knows? After Cade Cunningham, it is a little messy for at least at the time being. Nobody has really done any intensive scouting yet. Pascal's good. He had a down year. So we'll see if he bounces back or how he bounces back, but he is a very good player when he's playing well. The issue, you know, I got no issue dealing with Wiggins. I don't think Wiggins should necessarily be a major part of the future plans for the Warriors per se, but James Wiseman legitimately might end up being the best player out of that draft class. And like, yeah, he was hurt a lot, but he was slowly starting to figure out, and big men do usually take a little bit longer than guards, I assume because there's less of them. So, you know, there's less people to help teach, but Wiseman is going to figure it out if he can stay healthy. And the only thing the Warriors had been missing over these past few years was a dominant center. I get it going for someone like Pascal. I think if you can get someone better than Pascal, it's more worthwhile.
Sure.
But like, man, I guess I would do 7 and Wiggins for Pascal, but I wouldn't also give Wiseman in that deal. That feels like overpricing Pascal Siakam's skills, especially after a down year.
I don't disagree with that. What if it was a little bit flipped and it was a 3-team trade? You give all three of those players, because I think you want to move on from Wiggins from a contract point of view.
Yeah.
And just for a fit. I mean, either that or Oubre Jr. That's kind of up to you. But you give the seventh and Wiseman to the Raptors, because I'm sure the Raptors want to get younger. Mm-hmm. You give Wiggins to some other team. You give him back to Minnesota, because why not? No, I don't know. Give him to a third team, and you get Siakam, and then maybe either a pick or another like role player. Like if you want to max, I think
I wouldn't hate that.
It's also hard. It's hard giving up Wiseman. That's the tough.
Exactly. Part. Exactly. It's so you don't know how to value him. An injured rookie season, but all the skill in the world, like maybe could have been the number one pick had he actually played in college.
It's actually wild though. When you think about it, like 2019, after the Raptors won, there were genuine talks like from OKC that they wanted to give up. I don't know the entire story with this, but it sounded like they wanted to send either Russell Westbrook or Paul George to Toronto in exchange for Siakam. Now, granted, he came off a great playoff, but you know, some of those trades were just kind of obscene.
He's good. Don't get me wrong. He's going to be on my list later today, but like, Jesus Christ, it's Pascal Siakam. Everybody needs to calm down a little bit here. The other thing you mentioned, the potential of trading Wiggins back to Minnesota. And I just like, I think of him and Anthony Edwards staring and pointing at each other like the Spider-Man meme, because they're the exact same player. One just gets paid about $34 million more than the other one.
Yes. But
oh man.
That's it for the draft. I mean, there's a ton of others. Like the Magic get the number 5 pick, which is honestly good for them. They're gonna need it.
Yeah. We'll cover the draft a little closer when it's actually like draft time.
Yeah. But another thing that has happened in the NBA, coaching changes, coaching carousel.
Plenty of them.
We got four new hires.
Mm-hmm.
So run them all down, and then we'll talk about some that are noteworthy.
Yeah, for sure. So first and foremost, the one we tweeted about earlier, in the, like almost right after we finished our episode last week, the Celtics hired Ime Udoka as their head coach. So Stevens has moved up to the front office position. Ime Udoka will now be managing games for Boston.
Gut reaction, I don't care. But for some reason, he's going to be good. Like
I like Ime Udoka. I think he's a smart basketball mind. But it's just the Celtics, so I don't like him anymore.
He's probably just, like, the team's going to just do kind of well. And it's going to be like,
Yeah, well, I'm more intrigued on what their roster ends up looking like. Because that Al Horford Kemba Walker trade was hilarious. But, oh, boy. Dallas was the next one. They're overhauling. They got a new GM, if I'm not mistaken. And now bringing in Jason Kidd as their new head coach to help mentor Luka and this young core. I think it's, you know, they're making decisions based off of trying to keep Luka. And I think they're actually screwing themselves, but I think this is a good hire for Luka specifically. I think Jason Kidd is going to be able to teach him a lot, especially about that whole defense thing that he doesn't seem to like to do very much.
I also think this is good because when Jason Kidd got fired from the Bucks a few years back, it was a little shocking because they, you know, it seemed like everyone liked Jason Kidd, which it sounds like there's a bit of dissension in the Dallas locker room. So honestly, he could maybe fix that. He seems to be well liked. I don't know how good of a coach he is. That's like, you know, he's decent. He's had experience, you know, making the playoffs, but time will tell with that. Mm-hmm. Number three,
in my opinion, by far the best signing of them all. The Indiana Pacers snagged Rick Carlisle after he was relieved of his duties in Dallas. Basically, what I heard was that they were very under the radar about this. They kept it very quiet. And then all of a sudden, it was being reported that Rick Carlisle was going to Indiana to coach the Pacers. You know, the Pacers took a step back without Nate McMillan. And Nate McMillan is very much proving how great of a coach he is with the Hawks right now. But Indiana was a different team from last year to this year. And the new guy they brought in didn't do a very good job. They let him go. And you bring in a proven vet like Carlisle, who's going to turn a player like Sabonis into the best possible player he can be. Hopefully the roster can stay healthy. I love this signing. I don't like the Pacers very much, but I love this signing. I think Carlisle is going to do wonders for that squad.
I like Rick Carlisle, but what does this – I don't think it puts him past, like, the fifth seed in the East.
No, but it's going to put Indiana as a constant fixture in the playoffs in the East.
Okay.
They're not going to be teetering around eight anymore. They're going to be somewhere in five to seven, and okay, like, comfortably.
All right, at least we're on the same page with that. I mean, granted, the East is stacked, like, especially at the
top.
They
need a true superstar if they want to really contend.
Yeah. And then the last one, which has definitely come out as the most polarizing, Chauncey Billups, after a lot of talk last season that he's potentially going to be either head coaching hire, maybe a GM front office, he is now the Portland Trailblazers head coach. And
Five-year deal.
Wow. I think on face value, when you just hear the name Chauncey Billups, you know, I think – you sort of are like, okay, you got a job. That's cool. You know, great player for the Pistons and a lot of other teams. Finally gets his job. However, a lot has come out since then about sexual harassment, sexual assault allegations, or at least from the 90s, if I'm not mistaken.
I hadn't seen much about it, but
basically it's from what it sounds like, there was a case involving a lady who, you know, said Billups was sexually assaulting her or something to that degree, nothing good. And it was settled outside of court. That was the end of it. And, you know, it's being brought up now because apparently the Blazers did their due diligence on it, or at least that's what they said, but people are kind of outraged about that, you know, like, why would you give a guy the head coaching job? Because, you know, he has a history of that. Yeah, I honestly understand those qualms. And I think I feel weird talking about it because, yeah, if he truly did that, it's not a good look and it's not a good thing to do. Like, definitely a despicable action if it's true. Who knows? I guess time will tell if that's, it's, you know, kind of hard to comment about, to be honest. It's, I don't like the sound of it. That extra baggage is bad, to say the least.
You know, and I hope I'm wrong here, but it also makes it set. So, you know, one of the other candidates up for the job was Becky Hammon.
Right.
It almost makes keeping her and giving her a second interview and tag-ragging her along this whole time almost makes it like they were trying to like make up for something they already knew was going to happen. And that was signing a guy like Chauncey Billups to try and be like, no, we were considering a woman. We respect women. And I'm not trying to say the Portland Trailblazers don't respect women. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying it's a little fishy. It's a little suspicious.
Oh, sure.
Either way, you know, this is going to, all as always, but especially now, bring up the question of Dame. Is it, what does Dame think about all this? Is when his contract's up, is he going to want to leave? If he gets frustrated and they move CJ or something like that, is he going to want to demand a trade and want out? It's going to be very interesting. But for now, you know, Portland's in a pretty good spot. They were comfortably in the playoffs this year as the sixth seed, you know, lost in the first round. It was tough series against Denver. Give it a year, see how it goes. But, you know, you gotta keep your eye on that now, because that's, you know, Chauncey Billups is already, you know, on the hot seat. And Dame is going to be under the magnifying glass until his next contract. That's just how it's going to be. He's not somebody who loves to be the center of attention, but that's where it's going to be now.
So while ethically that was probably the worst hire they could have done, from a drama perspective, it's definitely helped out for storylines, because it does sound like, and these reports seem like rumors for the most part, but it sounds like Dame kind of isn't happy about the hire, or at least is considering asking for a trade, which, you know, as a Sixers fan, probably a good thing. I minced my words there, but who knows? It will be interesting, though, because if Dame gets moved, that will be something that will shake up the entire league. Also, if he goes to LA, I will not watch basketball next season. You've heard it here first.
Some due respect to James Harden. That would be the best player recently traded, right? I know Jimmy Butler was like a sign and trade too, and I don't know if you even consider Jimmy Butler better than Damian Lillard, but like Damian Lillard would be the best player traded in recent history.
Absolutely. Like, no offense to James Harden either. I think just from a injury perspective and also a scoring perspective, I think Damian Lillard's consistency in scoring would make him the best player being traded. Also, though, speaking of Jimmy Butler, if I hear one more comment about how the Sixers actively traded Jimmy Butler, I'm going to throw my computer out the window, because it was, he wanted to leave and we got something out of it.
Yes. No, I was actually explaining this to a buddy. I'm glad you brought this up. I want to clear this up. So the purpose of a sign and trade, like, what the hell is the concept of it? Because everybody was like, why would the Heat not just sign Jimmy Butler to a 4-year contract? The Heat had almost nothing to do with this trade. The Heat just conveniently were the team that Jimmy Butler wanted to go to, and the Sixers were being a nice enough franchise where they were like, we will give you this contract despite the fact that we know you don't want to be here. We will tell you where you want us to send you. We will get whatever we can back, and in turn, give the other team that extra year and that extra amount of money they have to pay you. So it's not like killer, but it makes it so Miami can't sign another Supermax player. It makes it a little more difficult. They got, you know, Iggy has to be gone, and a few other roster moves have to happen before they can even sign another, you know, regular max contract. It's stuff like, it's like the Sixers were going to lose almost no matter what. They got Richardson, which they ended up flipping for Curry, who was great for you guys. It's tough. Basketball is one of those weird sports where sometimes you have to make a trade, and that's what kind of happened.
My blood was boiling though, listening to it. Like, why would you just trade Jimmy Butler? He was your closer. I'm like, I don't think he wanted to stay.
The options were sign and trade and get Josh Richardson back, or just let him Jimmy walk. Butler just signs with the Miami Heat.
Yes. All right. That's enough for that. Let's move into the actual games.
Yes, sir.
So before last night, we'll start the Eastern Conference. It was 1-1. The Hawks won game one. They won by 3. Pretty good shooting performance from the Hawks. Milwaukee played meh, honestly not great. Trae Young looked like a star, which honestly good for him. Game two was like a 35-point blowout. I stopped watching after quarter two because it was, you know, they were down by 20 at half. Not much of that. Last night was game three, which I watched. The Hawks were up for probably majority of the game up until the fourth quarter. And then Chris Middleton took over, scored 20 in the fourth, outscored the Hawks, which, you know, finally Chris Middleton, you know, has played up to his, you know, I think his contract, dare I say, he was kind of the closer that the Bucks had needed around Giannis. And another storyline, Trae Young's injuries are starting to get to him. He has a bone bruise and, you know, he left, I think, late third quarter last night, and actually the Hawks went on a run, and then when he came back, that's when Chris Middleton went off. Unrelated, of course, but that's going to be interesting to monitor, because without Trae Young, the Hawks get mercy ruled, honestly. And
yeah, we play 25 point mercy here.
Yeah, I imagine he'll play game four. You know, I don't know how many minutes, but I think this is the end for the Hawks. I know I said that last series. I think I said before the first round, it was the end for them. This one, I genuinely do think. I think they're starting to fall apart. Bogdanovich is injured, hasn't played the same. And I don't think a lot of those other guys could cover the slack that Trae Young and Bogdanovich have, you know, really had for the Hawks. And it's a good run.
It's very impressive.
They're a beta version of the Miami Heat of last year. I wouldn't say they're nearly as good as the Heat from last year. The Heat, while it was a nice run, definitely had a lot of talent, and you know, that veteran experience definitely helped.
You know, we were talking a little bit about that earlier today, texting back and forth. The biggest difference, you know, Atlanta has to go fast. Their big thing is they can score the basketball, and when they're shooting, they can beat anybody. That's the whole point. And the difference between them and Miami is when Miami's offense wasn't, you know, flowing, they could, you know, lean back, rely on their defense, slow the game down. Atlanta can't do that. Atlanta can't trust that, especially against a team like the Bucks. And that's just kind of taking part. And then the Young injury, like you said, it's going to hurt them even more. Milwaukee, what I'll say, though, is they've been starting their series very slow. You know, they dropped the first two to Brooklyn. I know they swept Miami, but game one was the only close game of the series. It was a 2-point game. And they lost game one to Atlanta. At some point, you would expect that that could come to bite them in the ass. Obviously, Brooklyn ended up taking them to seven, so it was a longer series. But a team like, if Phoenix is healthy, and that's who they end up running into, which we'll get to in a second. But, you know, that's – if they fall 1-0, 2-0 in the finals, that's a mindset at that point. That's not just you're down and we have to come back. That's you're down, and now you're down to your last two losses. This is it. You are backs to the wall. We're really going to see what the Bucks are made of, is what I'm saying. If they don't come out ready to go in game one of the finals, they're going to be backs to the walls the rest of the series.
But also, one quick thing about the Hawks, they played well in this playoffs. It's honestly good for them. If Nate McMillan does not get the head coaching job for them, unless he decides not to, like, he's like, I want to, like, pursue other things, like, fine. But if he doesn't get the head coaching job, that is the biggest travesty of all time.
It'd be absurd. He is absolutely incredible. One of the best coaches.
He's done a great job. I honestly can't believe the Pacers let him go. Like we had touched on, you know,
yeah,
he's been great for the Hawks. All right. And then in the West, the Western Conference, you know, it's 3-1 right now. Game five is starting. Actually, it's probably 30 minutes in right now. The Suns are up 3-1. Definitely a few interesting games in the series. You had the Ayton dunk, basically at the buzzer. The alley-oop, yes. That was game two of them. Yeah, it was game two because game one was.
I just want to explain that rule to people really quickly because I saw some confusion on Twitter. On the inbound, you are allowed to touch the basketball if it's above the rim. Normally, that's a goaltender basket interference if you're on offense. But on an inbound, you're allowed to touch it. So essentially, Jay Crowder should have just been told, shoot the basketball. And Ayton can do whatever he wants. So that's how the alley-oop was born.
Yes. That was game two. Game three, the Clippers won. With CP3 back. And then game four was pretty much a slugfest where the Suns came out on top. Basically, it was the Clippers needed a three in the last minute. And every time they touched the ball, the Suns would foul them. And it was rinse and repeat. So that was a very interesting game. Right now is game five is going on. The Clippers are up in the first quarter, 36-26. I can see them winning tonight in terms of winning the series. I think that's pretty improbable. However, Ty Lue has done some miracle work before. But 3-1 in the finals, that's all I'll say. But it's seems pretty improbable without Kawhi Leonard back. It's hard. I have a lot of respect for this Clippers team. I've been high on them the entire year, but I think we're going to have a rematch of like a 1970s finals with the Suns and Bucks. And I think it'll be a good finals. Who do you want to win? Actually, I know who you want to win of those.
I don't give a shit about who I want to win. I want to say definitively right now, the NBA champions are going to be the Phoenix Suns. That's what I was gearing up to say. We know my thoughts on the Milwaukee Bucks, and I'm very skeptical of them. But
despite wanting Giannis like every single offseason.
Despite wanting Giannis, of course. But Phoenix is the most complete basketball team. When Chris Paul and Devin Booker are together, it is maybe the best backcourt in basketball. I think there's genuinely nothing that duo can't do. You add in a guy like Ayton, who literally comes out of last game and says, Chris Paul's the best thing that's ever happened in my career. Guess what? Chris Paul's playing with him right now. That's not good for the other team. Ayton's playing like a much better player than he is. And honestly, like I told you at the beginning of this show, I was thinking about how I should have put Ayton in my top 50 instead of Drummond at 50. And I really truly think that now, because Chris Paul has brought out a side of Ayton that wouldn't have happened last year, or wouldn't have happened without him. Chris Paul is the best player on this team. I'm not going to argue that with people anymore. It's not even a question how much Chris Paul impacts the winning of this Phoenix Suns team. With him on the court, Giannis, Trae Young, last year's Jimmy Butler, fucking Michael Jordan's Bulls, it doesn't matter. Chris Paul's winning this championship. He's getting his first chip. Phoenix wants to do it for him. They're ready. This team looks real, real good.
If we have Clippers Suns in the finals, I think from a player perspective, I would probably want Giannis to win. I take that back. I think I want the Suns to win as well. From the perspective of Chris Paul gets a championship, I think Booker gets a little bit more respect. The Suns also have not won a championship ever, and the closest they had gotten besides Steve Nash's time there, and they didn't make it to the finals when he was there, was in, I think, the 70s when they were a new team. They played the Bucks with Oscar Robertson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and they lost, I think, in six games.
Most people would.
Yeah. So to me, like, I kind of would like the Suns to win one. And honestly, we are probably like 2 or 3 years removed when the city of Phoenix was telling the owners to sell the team or get better. And look where we are now. We have had a complete turnaround. It is incredible to think about.
Oh, yeah. No,
we went from Eric Bledsoe telling Twitter to trade me to effectively being in the doorstep of a championship. Now, granted, they have to win the Western Conference. That is not a gimme. I don't think they're going to win tonight. And who knows? They could come back. But Ty Lue, 3-1 specialist. I'm just saying.
Yeah. That's truly why he's brought in, just to come back from 3-1 in the playoffs.
We fire coach just for this purpose.
To be fair, they fired Doc, whose job was to blow a 3-1 lead in the playoffs. So.
Yeah. The stars are aligning for the Clippers to come back. So
who knows? Maybe Kawhi's back in game 6. We'll see. That's what we got for the playoffs here. Last thing for basketball before we move into our next 10 for our top 50 is the Olympic roster for the men's basketball team has been announced. We tweeted it out earlier, but we wanted to let you guys know who it is. So the guards on the list, we're going to have Portland's Damian Lillard, Phoenix's Devin Booker, Washington's Bradley Beal, Chicago's Zach LaVine, and Milwaukee's Drew Holiday. And then for the forwards and bigs, Brooklyn's Kevin Durant, Boston's Jason Tatum, Cleveland's Kevin Love, Golden State's Draymond Green, Miami's Bam Adebayo, Milwaukee's Chris Middleton, and the Detroit Pistons' very own Jeremy Grant will round out the U.S. roster. I think it's a great roster. I don't think the U.S. is going to have any issues winning the gold medal yet again.
No.
But I want to say one thing that truly, truly brings pain to my heart. So Kevin Love was the last roster spot. Do you know who was next?
I'm going to guess a Heat player.
Who would make me happier than anyone else?
If they were on the Olympic roster.
If they were on the Olympic roster.
Jimmy?
Duncan Robinson.
No, you're joking.
Duncan Robinson was seriously being considered for Kevin Love's spot. They went with Love. I don't really know why, but my heart is broken at that. I think Duncan Robinson would have been amazing. Imagine a lineup where it's like these superstars like Lillard, Booker, Durant. You got like Bam or Green out there or something, and then it's Duncan Robinson.
Well, you know, every Olympic team needs a person to bully. Like in the 92 Dream Team is Christian Laettner. So yeah, yep. Duncan Robinson, who made a perfect bully target. But it would have been interesting. That's one of those, like, if you had a trivia question, it was like, name the 12, 13 players in this roster. You get 11 of them, and then you're like, who's the last one? It's, oh, yeah, it's Duncan Robinson, of course.
Duncan. America runs on Duncan, and I work at the Java House. That's okay. But that's going to round it out for the news report here on the NBA. However, our next segment, as if you listened last week, you already know, is going to still be based off of basketball, as we are going down, listing our top 50 current active basketball players. We are up to numbers 40 through 31. So we're going to start here with number 40. Alex, who is the 40th best basketball player in your eyes?
All right. So you had mentioned him last week. I have him a little bit higher. I went with SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander of the Oklahoma City Thunder. You had mentioned, yeah, he was on one of the worst teams in the league, and I get that. But Sam Presti has a process, and he will own the entire draft or the NBA, whichever comes first. But Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has been balling out since the Paul George trade. He is averaging like 25-plus points a game. Granted, they're not getting a whole lot of wins, but, I mean, think about last year when Chris Paul was on the team. Also balling out, and they were making a pretty good run in the playoffs. They lost in seven to the Rockets. A lot of potential there. I think if you get some good players around him, and I think as much as we love Lu Dort, I think better players than Lu Dort, dare I say.
We love Lu Dort,
though. I think the Thunder are genuinely a great team, and I don't know if he'll develop into the number one option on a championship team, but he could certainly be a number two option, and I feel very confident about saying that.
Oh yeah, he's got a very bright future. I got no qualms with him. You know, I had him at 45. You got him at 40. No big deal there. He's gonna be, you know, higher and higher on this list for years to come. It'll be interesting to see what they do with Kemba and the rest of that roster. 40 for me is your Lehigh boy, Mr. CJ McCollum. I love CJ. He taught me how to shoot a floater back at a Lehigh basketball camp. You know, one of the best shots in my arsenal. Absolutely lethal scorer before his injury, was having one of the best years of his career this past season, averaging 23 points per game, just under 5 assists. He's incredible. He can score the basketball from any spot in the half court. His issue is the fact that he is a pretty bad defensive player, is what he is. That's the backcourt. That's how the backcourt goes in Portland. They don't miss shots, but they also don't stop you from making shots on the other end. I love CJ. He's spectacular. If he gets traded, I'd be shook. I genuinely would be. But man, I mean, if you're talking about some of the best players, just go and get you a bucket. CJ at least has to be in that conversation. That's how good he is at offense.
All right. I like that pick. My 39 is probably the most fundamentally sound basketball player ever, just from a statistics standpoint. Malcolm Brogdon.
Ooh, I like that on this list.
50-40-90 club. He's just point guard, facilitator, all that. You could argue he's higher, but I think it's hard. He's young. He's got a lot of potential. I think does a lot for any team he's on, and shoots very efficiently. My problem is that whatever team he's on just seems to not live up to the potential. When he was in the Bucks, they weren't getting there. And granted, that was also young with Giannis and all that. Mm-hmm. The other thing, though, is on the Pacers have not been too great. And that could also be a byproduct of the coaches we talked about before. Great player. I really just want to see him have a bit of success in the playoffs. I think he's a likable guy. Other than when he took Rookie of the Year from Joel Embiid a few years ago. But I like him. I think he can do a lot of good for a team. And he's truly the essence of a great third piece for a championship caliber team. That's not a knock on him. I just, like, if he's the third piece in any team, that team is winning a chip.
That's a good team.
Yes, yeah. That's a damn good team. All right, no, so that's my pick.
I like that a lot. I think the only reason I didn't end up putting him in my top 50 is because he just gets injured a lot, like, every year. Fair. That's my only issue with him. But no, what you said about being one of the most fundamentally skilled players in the game is absolutely correct. I absolutely love the game of Malcolm Brogdon. My 39 might be a little unpopular for people. He probably should be a little higher on this list, but I like to take it slow with young guys. Number 39 for me is Ja Morant of the Memphis Grizzlies. really came on at the end of last season, had a great push to get them into the play-in and then into the playoffs themselves. There's no real hole in his game. He's not the best three-point shooter, but that'll come, I'm sure. He's an excellent Derrick Rose type basketball player. He's just young. He's got to learn a little more about how the game works. He's got to get a little smarter. He's got to, you know, become a bit more of an efficient scorer, but he's well on his way. I mean, by the time, you know, I'm not saying we're necessarily going to be doing this in a year, but say we were to do this in another year, I'm sure Ja Morant will be right around, if not in my top 25. He is that skilled. I genuinely think he may have a chance to win an MVP at some point in his career. But for now, he's, like I said, just a little bit young. He's got a little bit of a ways to go still. But Memphis, very, very bright future behind their point guard.
All right, 38. I have a very unpopular one.
Give it
to me. And also, I want to fight someone with this. 38. I have Nikola Vucevic.
Okay. I don't hate that. I got him close to that. So
the reason these are fighting words, I know he's an all star, but you had the audacity to say that Zach LaVine is worse than him, and I just
he is.
No.
Zach LaVine does one thing. Nikola Vucevic does like.
You're telling me, stop. You're telling me you would rather, if the Heat were like, we could either have Zach LaVine or we could have Vucevic.
Oh my God, I want Vucevic so much more. You joke. That means Bam high? Four. I mean, that's besides the point. But, for the Heat, it's a bad example because I watch a lot of Heat, so I genuinely think the Heat's lineup would be primed with a Cat Towns, Nick Vucevic type center. The reason I don't like LaVine is because he literally doesn't know how to do anything else besides shoot. He is incredible at shooting the basketball.
But the NBA is literally based off of like scoring.
Okay, sure. That's fine. But then how come he scores 27 and a half points per game and the Bulls still don't sniff the playoffs?
Because have you seen the rest of the Bulls roster?
I have. But have you seen the rest of the Wizards roster? Their two superstars got them there. Why didn't the Bulls' two superstars get superstars?
Okay, hold up. You cannot call Zach LaVine and Vucevic superstars.
But you would at least think that two players of that caliber would be able to at least get into the play-in tournament.
No, because Vucevic is not, like, he should not be an all-star. That is my gripe. Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal.
Okay, I agree with that because, first of all, Bam should have been the all-star. We've talked about this millions of times.
Yes.
But, I'm very intrigued on where you have Zach LaVine on this list. And I'm just curious where you have him ranked because like, I do see the value that other people see in him. I just don't value that as much in a basketball player.
Yeah. You value fundamentals and defense. Ooh, boring. Boring.
Whatever. Wins championships. Boring. But so 38 for you is Nick Vucevic. I respect it.
Fair enough.
I believe you had my 38 last week in your list. My 38 is Pascal Siakam, the Toronto Raptors. Despite their fall from grace, I do still think the Raptors have some nice individual pieces. I think Pascal Siakam is the definitive second best player on the Toronto Raptors, though. We'll see how much longer it is until Kyle Lowry gets traded. But like we said earlier in the episode, Siakam's coming off a rough year. He struggled a lot as the top scoring option for his team. He's not quite as dominant of a rebounder as you would hopefully like out of what was he was their starting center for most of the year, to be honest. The thing with Siakam and why I think I didn't have him quite as low as you did is because he can do a lot. Like he's not the best defender, but I mean, he can score, he can rebound, he can assist. Those are three fundamental pieces for an offense. He's one of those guys where it's consistency, but it's also, he was always going to be a really good basketball player. The issue was, I think his ceiling got projected to be a little bit higher than it really is. And where he can still improve as a player, he's never going to crack that superstar barrier. And I think Toronto realized that a year too late, if I'm being honest, because now they're like, oh, we got some work to do with this as our core. And, you know, I like Pascal. He was on my fantasy team. He did pretty well for me, but he had some games where he had like 5-5-4. That's unacceptable from the best team, best player on a team, even if his name is Draymond Green.
All right. 37 now. I have your pick at 39, if I'm not mistaken, Ja Morant.
All right.
A lot of the same reasons, pretty young. I think give him some time and he'll really develop. I don't know if his three-point shooting will ever be incredible, kind of like how Derrick Rose is, but a lot of potential, great facilitator, explosive, kind of a mix between Westbrook and Rose, and I'd say a better shooter than Westbrook. Can do a lot, and I don't know how great the Grizzlies will be, but they're young and Morant will be leading them for years to come.
100%. All right, 37?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I actually changed 37 and 36 as I was writing them down. So 37 now for me is Drew Holiday of the Milwaukee Bucks.
Okay.
His value rose, especially during this playoff run for them, especially during that series with the Heat. My God, did he turn Goran Dragic into a useless basketball player. He's an incredible defensive player, all defensive first team this year. He struggles on offense, but he can play well. He can have his hot games. I think he had a 20 spot in their first game against the Hawks in the conference finals. He really can do it all. With him, again, it's the consistency on offense isn't always there, but in terms of defense, there's not much more you can ask for out of a star guard. So that's 37 for me, Mr. Drew Holiday.
All right. At 36, I have the one, the only, the mouthpiece of the Warriors, Draymond Green. This is controversial in the sense that if you just look at basketball in terms of stats, yeah, Draymond Green does not deserve to be anywhere near this list. But between the championships, between the accolades, between the ability to get in people's heads, the court presence, to be honest, a lot of the intangibles, I know I sound like a pompous idiot saying all this, but Draymond Green does a lot for the Warriors that goes unrecognized. He is not a great shooter by any means.
No.
But he does a lot for that team and is kind of a glue guy for them, dare I say. He's kept them together, has done a lot, and has been a vital part for their three championships. So,
yeah.
Draymond.
One or two defensive players of the year.
Yes.
Two? I think it's two.
I think it's two, yes.
And then he finished third for this season's defensive player of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. So, regardless, though, a great defender can guard, I would say, one through five.
Mm-hmm. Five
is a little question.
All the ones anymore, but
still, though, he can lock up a lot of players.
Yeah.
36 is Draymond Green for me.
Well, the first unison pick we have, number 36, Draymond Green of the Golden State Warriors for
Let's
me
go.
As well. One of those fancy seasons where he averaged more assists and rebounds than points, 7.1 rebounds, 8.9 assists. Like you said, one of the greatest glue guys the NBA has ever seen. I mean, if you're a stat watcher, you have no idea why Draymond Green is as good as everybody talks about. Draymond Green is always one of the most underappreciated players. You can love him or hate him. I genuinely hate him, but I understand how important he is and how good he is. He is, like you said, one of the best smack talkers and loud mouths in all of basketball. He gets in your head. He makes every possession hell when you're going up against him. Draymond Green, no question, deserves to be on this list. Number 36 for both of us. Love that.
Gotta love it. That's the first unison one. I would have expected it to take probably to the top 20, but here we are.
There we are.
All right, 35. Another one that I'm a little unsure about, Mike Conley.
Oh, wow. He just missed the list for me.
I know. I understand that. But I like his play. I think he does a lot. And that's more of a career thing, too. Kind of like how Lowry and DeRozan are on the list, just from what they did. He never went to an NBA Finals, but with that Western Conference grit and grind Memphis Grizzlies team, there's a lot of deserving accolades in there. He's still playing well in the Jazz. I mean, he's been hurt a bit, but still puts up a lot of points, was on the best team in the West this year, and an all-star as well.
Yeah.
So, and Mike Conley is 35. I could understand leaving him off the list, but I couldn't. My buddy and I have always had the infamous Drew Holiday versus Mike Conley debate. I have stuck to my guns with Mike Conley, so he's got to be ahead of Drew Holiday.
First of all, absolute respect. Second of all, I very much appreciate the game of Mike Conley. I've always loved him. I've always been one of those guys that was like, I understand why you're not an all-star, but I want you to be so badly. I was one of those people who was like, I get that he got overpaid, but I love that he got that bag.
Mm-hmm.
So I love Mike Conley. No issues of him being on your list on my end. My 35, however, a slightly different basketball player. That would be Brandon Ingram of the New Orleans Pelicans. There's an argument he's a top 25 player in basketball. He was one of the best players on my fantasy team this past year. I got to watch a lot of what he does statistically, and he's a pretty good statistic player. He was just under averaging 25, 5, and 5. He averages about just under 24 and then 4.9, 4.9. And it's a pretty good mark to be at for a young player. His comparison on offense is a mini, you know, is a young man's Kevin Durant. He's getting closer on the three-point shooting. That has improved. His decision-making is poor. He's like Giannis, not a very smart basketball player. That's his biggest knock. He could be so much better than he currently is, which is why I have him not in my 50 to 40, but at 35. He's getting to that point, though, where the he's too young excuse isn't going to kind of kick in anymore. It's like you either have to take that next step or you have to understand that you're just going to be a star for the rest of your life. I think he can take it. I think he probably will take it. But for now, until the decision, I mean, until he stops just pulling up from three for absolutely no reason with 2 minutes left in a close game, he's not sniffing my top 25. Not close.
Well, lucky enough for you, Robbie, at 35, if I'm not mistaken.
Or you should be at 34.
34. Oops. Can't count today. Yeah, 34. I also have Brandon Ingram.
All right.
So same reasons. I think he is the closest thing to Kevin Durant that we have seen since, well, Kevin Durant. And to me, he has a lot of potential. He plays in a very bad Pelicans team. And I hope he takes that next step, but he hasn't yet. But there's a lot of potential. And we have seen him do a lot of great things, especially when he was in the Lakers and LeBron was out. He'd, you know, play tremendously. So that's why he's at 34 for me. Who knows? He could either rise a lot in a few years or absolutely plummet.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly where he's at right now. My 34, I hate that I have him so high on this list, but I couldn't argue it too much in my head. Karl Anthony Towns is number 34 for me. The biggest argument is, like, I know he's so soft. He's such a bitch. He's one of the worst defensive players in basketball. And for someone who's 7-1, it's absurd. But to average almost 25-11 in the NBA is regardless pretty damn impressive. I understand he's on a really bad basketball team, which also doesn't help his case. I think part of why he's so bad and so soft is because he's on the Timberwolves. I think he needed a team like San Antonio or Miami to kind of rough him up a little bit and like get physical and understand his size. But that didn't happen. So I don't think he should be an all-star anytime soon again. I think there's still a step further he can take. It's all on defense, but he is not a top five center in basketball, in my opinion. That was the biggest part of this ranking for him, is that he did not crack the top five of centers. Top seven, sure. I think I only had seven on this list entirely, but he's not top five, and that's where he should be at this point in his career. That's all I'm saying.
I definitely had him a lot lower, but I understand. Yeah, he does do a lot for the team. The team just absolutely sucks.
Sucks booty.
All right, 33. A little biased in this one, but I went with CJ McCollum, had him a little bit higher. And yeah, you're right. His defense is a little suspicious, to say the least, but I've seen what he can do in terms of scoring and also closing out games. I know it's been a bit since the, you know, Trailblazers have been really good, but in 2019, when they were playing the Nuggets, you know, he closed out game 7. It wasn't Dame making that shot. It was CJ McCollum hitting the clutch shots. And I think he's got one of the prettiest, like, shots in terms of when he shoots and he's open, it's going in. Whatever it may be, maybe it's that Lehigh product. Maybe it's just the fact that he's that good. I'm definitely biased. I, you know, will not hide that. But I think CJ, if he was a little bit better defender, he could be, you know, top 25, no problem. He'd
be a perennial all-star.
Exactly. He's one of those guys that never got an all-star bid, but is like, you just kind of want him to get one, but just he hasn't. This was the year, actually, but, you know, getting hurt didn't help.
Yeah, it was tough.
So for me, I got 33, CJ McCollum.
I love CJ. No qualms. All right. You ready to get real pissed off?
No.
Like real pissed off?
Go for it.
Number 33, power forward for the New Orleans Pelicans, Zion Williamson.
What?
Does not crack the top 25.
You're high.
I am, but that is regardless of the point. Look, guys, like I said, I critique young guys a little bit more because part of it is just they're not intellectually there because they haven't had the chance to be. Zion is amazing. In fact, Zion is probably better than some of the players I have ranked better than him in terms of basketball skill and physical skill. It is all about consistency and turning it into wins. The Pelicans weren't good this year. I'm not going to sugarcoat this. And they have two guys that were considered for All-Stars I don't think either me. Oh no, Zion was an All-Star this year. Brandon Ingram was last year. He's great. Like, I mean, player efficiency rating, one of the best players in basketball. The most, I believe, the second most amount of points per game of players I've ranked so far to Zach LaVine, of course. Zion Williamson, 27-7, just under 4 assists. He's incredible. Don't get me wrong. He's just not.
You have said everything so positive about this man. He's like, but 30th.
But it's because I have no real knock against him. They're just. Are players that can do more than him at this point in his career. Zion Williamson will be a top 10 player in basketball. He will probably be a top 5 player in basketball at some point. But right now, there are just players with this, maybe not the same physical acumen that he does, but the same mindset, the same, some of the same abilities and more knowledge than him. That's really it. It's just with him and Ja, it's just, you got to play a little longer for me to truly understand that this is a consistent thing you're going to be doing every year. And it's going to lead your team to the playoffs. That is genuinely the most important thing that I considered, is how successful your teams have been when I was ranking those lists. Obviously, seeing that Cat was just ranked doesn't help my argument, but that was one of the biggest things, is how well you can turn your personal success into team success.
No, because the Pelicans suck, but
they do suck.
He's playing. He's like, it's like LeBron on the Cavs at the start of his career. It's like that. That's how fair. I view Zion's.
That's fair. I do put LeBron on a pedestal, so it's hard for me to say that someone was like that smart coming out of college. But I honestly don't really remember how smart LeBron was coming out of college. So you may genuinely be more right here.
Well, considering LeBron never came out of college, yeah.
Into the NBA. You're right. My bad. Look at me having done more college than LeBron James. God, I'm proud of myself.
Shouldn't be, but all right. All right, number 32. I have Zach LaVine here.
I'm sorry, but before you go into this, at 32, you have Zach LaVine.
I have Zach LaVine.
Yeah. I have Nick Vucevic at 32.
Go home. Stop. All right. Well, we have beat Zach LaVine and Vucevic to a pulp at this point, so I think this will be pretty short. I'd rather have Zach LaVine than Vucevic. Robbie clearly begs to differ. You can decide that. I'd rather take the guy who can score at will and clinch games.
Rather take the big man that can move, pass, and rebound.
You are like 2010 NBA fan number one.
Yes, all because right. 2010 was the best. No, I'm kidding. But yeah no.
I love 2010 NBA, so no one ever.
32 right. Being the two Chicago Bulls is the epitome of us saying, and the Chicago Bulls are just not quite good enough at basketball to be relevant.
They definitely are not. So since we kind of beat them to a pulp, I guess I'll go with 31, the last one for this week. I have Domantas Sabonis here.
Okay.
You could make an argument for him moving up. I think there's a lot of potential for him. It's just his team. Between that, you know, just how meh they've been. He's been a little bit injured too. I don't know. That mix to me justifies him being there. He's an all-star. He's playing very well, and I'd love to have him on a team, you know, having him on the Sixers, or just putting him on any team would make the team better. He can do a lot, not in terms just of scoring, but also rebounding and facilitating. I like him here, though. I think give him a few years, he could definitely rise, and I think he's going to steadily increase and get better. But right now, I have him at 31.
Okay. I have him a little bit higher. I'll get to him next week.
It's fine,
I'm a big fan of Domantas Sabonis' game. This one might also ruffle some feathers, but I feel pretty confident. Number 31 for me is Julius Randle with the New York Knicks.
Okay.
Excellent season. Most improved player. Got the Knicks to the playoffs for the first time since 2013. But then in the playoffs did in fact show how limited he was. He needs a little help. He's never going to be the best player on a championship contending team. He's excellent. I actually see a lot of similarities in him and Zion's game, not in terms of necessarily athleticism, but in how they approach offensive possessions, how kind of they're used within their team's offenses can actually be very similar. I think obviously Zion is going to be better than Julius Randle in the long term, but Randle is going to be the Knicks. I don't want to say like spearhead moving forward, but he is going to draw another player as good as him to New York. And then them two together will eventually put New York back on the map for a legitimate superstar. So where his importance for New York may be more off the court than on the court, I still respect the game of Julius Randle very much. I genuinely believe that the All-Star selection was he was worthy of said All-Star selection. I think the All-NBA second team was a little much, but definitely an All-NBA player this year. Yeah, no, a spectacular season. The only Nick on my list, but top number 31, Julius Randle. That's where I'm going to end my list today. That's what we got for you guys, though, for our top 30 rank for this week, 40 to 31. Of course, we'll be back next week with the next set. That one's going to be the one that I know my list is going to piss the most people off, so I'm very excited about it, as we know that I'm an agent of chaos.
Of course.
Any final thoughts you want to leave us with here before we wrap up the show?
I still think Zach LaVine's better than Vucevic, but like, well, whatever. It's fine.
We're going to find a way to, I mean, you know, we can't definitively say this, but we're going to find a way to really get to hammer this argument out, because I like,
that's, man, the next kitchen Vucevic debate.
I guess so. Like, I just see Vucevic and I'm like, he's not an all-star. So it's weird because I hate on him a lot, but like, man, I don't think there's much he can't do. He's not the best defender, but like, nobody on the Bulls plays defense. So
it's going to be like the least viewed episode of all time. Nick Vucevic versus Zach LaVine. Who's the better player? We should go bring Scott back on, because Scott will have the definitive answer for that.
We'll see about that. Get some of the Chicago natives to weigh in here.
If Scott says Vucevic, I will throw him off the show, though.
I can't imagine he would. I was thinking about all my Bulls buddies when I put Zach LaVine so low on the list. But
of course.
Again, I digress. That all being said, hope you guys enjoyed the content. We'll be back next week again with the update, you know, on the Stanley Cup, on the NBA playoffs, any other NFL roster moves. And like I said, numbers 30 to 21 for our NBA player rank. Until then, I hope you guys, as always, have a fantastic week. Choose to share that with our show, please. And thank you again. Hop on Viget, use our referral code. Have a fantastic week, y'all.
Yeah, go in that PS5 and tweet at us. But if you don't, hope you still win, and take care, everyone. Enjoy 4th of July weekend.
Absolutely.